As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hello everyone, I'm Danny Kelly and I'm your host. I enjoy that exalted position of the View from the Lane, the Tottenham Hotspur podcast, where as we always promise you, all thriller, very little filler. I'm joined on the podcast today by The Athletic's Charlie Eccleshare, making a welcome return. And of course, James Moore is here with us as well, and they'll be answering some of the questions posed by our subscribers to The Athletic. Lots of questions came in, we've picked the best of them, we'll try and answer those a little later in the show. But first, I think it would be remiss of us not to talk about a series of events in São Paulo in Brazil, the like of which I, having watched football for half a century, I thought I'd seen absolutely everything. But people with clipboards and pandemic masks walking onto the pitch to demand the removal of, let's be fair, Spurs players from said pitch, I've never seen the likes before. For part of this, at least, I shall put on this straw hat that I've got to see, sharecropper's hat. It won't work on the radio and, of course, on this podcast. But if I'd been to South America on a jaunt, this is how I would look. You both laugh here now. That's very good. It appears to me, Charlie, I don't know which of you is the expert on South American politics. This is nuts what's happened with the Spurs players. Not only, and I'm separating them, the three of them, including the fellow who went to Colombia, I'm separating them from the Aston Villa players because it turns out the Villa players had permission. Now, they had permission to do something that was still wrong, but at least they had permission. What have you made of what's gone on with Christian Romero, Giovanni Lo Celso, and to some extent, Davinson Sanchez?
Yeah, I mean, it was spent most of yesterday working on a piece that went up this morning on just trying to do, as you say, trying to make sense of it, because it is an extraordinary situation when you've got federal police and health agency officials storming the pitch to kind of tell them to leave or, you know, to deport them from the country. And I mean, we won't get too much into the kind of Brazil-Argentina side. Suffice to say, tensions there remain very high. But yeah, from a Spurs perspective, there's so much to unpack, really, because all Premier League clubs were initially unanimous that they didn't want their players going to red list countries on this international break because of the quarantining they'd have to do on their return and how that would affect the clubs. Then Villa sort of broke ranks and said, actually, Martinez and Buendia could go with Argentina. Then you have this slightly weird situation with Spurs, whereby they weren't happy. They didn't want the players to go. You know, they wanted Romero, Lo Celso and Sanchez to stay put. But they were more or less told, well, we are going. But to try and placate the club, they came up with this plan that they would stop off in Croatia on the way back so they could quarantine there effectively, but it would mean they could train, which is what they're going to do now, rather than being stuck in a hotel room where they obviously couldn't really do anything.
And also, if I'm correct, they also stopped off in Venezuela on the way out so that they could honestly say that they hadn't travelled directly from Britain, as if that would fool the Brazilian authorities, particularly as they had advertised their journey with that hilarious Instagram picture of the four of them giving thumbs up as their aeroplane shot over Big Ben in the middle of the night.
I do like the idea of whoever filled in the forms. We don't really know if it was them leaving UK off and hoping that might sort of pass muster.
We've all done
as
it.
If like that, yeah, that they won't remember. I mean, the sense I got, or the sense that people have in Argentina and Brazil, is that the two FAs would have kind of reached an agreement that, look, this will be okay. You know, we can do this. Otherwise, they wouldn't really have gone. But then the health agency and Anvisa got involved, and they were like, no, this isn't happening. So you've got this like complete disconnect even within the country. Then obviously it all kicks off on Sunday night. Spurs are watching, being like, well, this is kind of exactly why we were wary of this happening. And it's a bit of a semantic issue, is the extent to which they allowed the players to go or agreed to this Croatia plan. You know, it's a bit like if you tell someone you're doing something and they don't stop you, is that kind of, you know, they're not necessarily on board with it. But anyway, so it all kicked off. Spurs are left feeling a little bit, well, quite a lot frustrated with how it's played out. At least, though, they are, the Celso and Romero are going to Croatia, or are in Croatia. They went last night. It looked for a long time yesterday as if they were staying, because
to play against Bolivia, I think it is.
Yeah, Bolivia on Thursday night, Friday morning UK time. Because Martinez and Buendia, the Aston Villa players, they were kind of waved off by Argentina earlier in the day. No mention of Romero and Lo Celso. At that time, speaking to people in Argentina, they thought they were going to stay put. And obviously the manager, Scaloni, had said last week that actually, despite this agreement, in inverted commas, that they would only play the first two games, they were in fact going to be available for the third. So at least they are in Croatia now. They've got a conditioning coach from Spurs out with them, and they can kind of, you know, stay in shape and then be in with the chance of facing Chelsea in a couple of weeks' time. Whereas it looked, if they'd stayed on for this Bolivia game, they would have missed that game and been doubts for the North London derby. So it's kind of the best of a very bad and weird situation. But this is going to rumble on because their internationals in October and November. So, yeah, this certainly isn't the last you've heard of it.
And again, it's a triumvirate of internationals. So not only are the South American players of the European clubs, and of course the clubs signed them knowing they were South American internationals, but they didn't understand the intensity caused by COVID and playing the Copa America when they could have. It was an extra Copa America, don't forget. They could have and should have played the World Cup qualifiers this summer. Mm. They've left themselves in an extraordinary position. I mean, nobody can yet say when this, if they don't declare Brazil the winners of the game with Argentina, which will cause pandemonium in the South American football authorities, there's no date in which that game can be played. The biggest international in world football, they haven't got a place where they can play. Incidentally, before I get James's view on this, Charlie, you're our resident linguist. Do you know what the Spanish for fiasco is?
No, I don't. Please tell me.
It's El Fiasco. El
Fiasco is my wrestling name.
Do you wear one of those masks, James? Yeah, good. Well, that's a shame, because your lovely visage here is shining in front of me. I think Charlie has given a very erudite, neutral opinion of what went on there.
Yeah, grown up.
As a Spurs fan, I think this is a load of nonsense. And I mean, I know the PFA were only allowed to be fined 2 weeks' wages, but they should also be given what my old dad, if he was still with us, would describe as a leather injection, a boot up the backside.
Yeah, I actually can't work out whether I'm annoyed with the players or not. So Jack, who isn't with us today, has written a column this morning saying, don't blame the players. You know, getting Messi to the World Cup is a massive thing for them.
Of course he has. Of course he has.
Them up is pathetic. But it does seem to me like they've kind of been caught between like the two associations. FIFA, the South American Association, the Argentine Association, and Spurs. It's also a bit of a mess, really. And having thought those scenes that we saw with the health officials on the pitch was the maddest thing I'd ever seen in football, and you expect that to come from South America. I've just remembered, do you remember when Enner Valencia was like, was he arrested on the pitch? He kind of got an injury and went
something
off in
like
a
that.
Game, and he like he was like chased around the pitch on the back of like a sort of gurney, and they were chasing him around the pitch. That suddenly just come to my mind.
It's all why I absolutely love and adore South American football and watch it as much as I can. My tolerance goes up to and including the point when Spurs start losing footballers because of the nonsense of South American football. James, you managed to avoid the question. Do you think they are to blame in any way, the players?
I mean, I don't think so, really. No. I mean, I just think they'd be caught in, like I said, I mean, I think they'd be caught in the middle of it. And I just think probably FIFA, more than anyone else, needed to kind of intervene there. I mean, this problem, it was kind of obvious that it was going to come, wasn't it? And I don't think anyone's really come in and given like a sort of hard and fast rule. You know, if the Premier League, I know the Premier League put out that statement between the 20 clubs saying that players wouldn't be allowed to go. But that was a sort of informal agreement, really, wasn't it? More than an official rule, which I would have had to have come from FIFA. So, you know, I don't blame the players for wanting to play in that game. I mean, could they refuse to play? Yes, they could. But, you know, the World Cup coming up at the end or halfway through next season.
I mean, it's also a fact, isn't it? I mean, forgive me, I'm not an expert on these international relations through COVID-19. The reason why the others weren't in trouble is that it's only the UK that has this red list reciprocal hate relationship with the various South American countries. If Giovanni Lo Celso had been lucky enough, for instance, to play for Shamrock Rovers here in the Republic of Ireland, where I live, he'd have had no problem. He can go to Brazil. I think this is a rolling story, but the idea, and I think listeners to a Spurs podcast, the idea that two of us, I mean, does anyone know what's happening with Sanchez? Has he also gone to Croatia?
But, were you about to say the holiday camp?
Yeah.
anything but. Yeah.
Oh, hang on. I've spent some time in Croatia. Everyone's on holiday most of the time. It's lovely.
It is lovely. Sanchez went yesterday as well, but he's actually suspended for their next game anyway, so he couldn't play. So that was an easier negotiation. Yeah. He's there. So it's the three of them and then the two Aston Villa guys. As people have pointed out, it's quite a five-a-side team that they've got.
Yeah.
The thing that I found quite strange was there was a point, possibly like halfway through Monday, where it seemed like it was going to be the two Villa players and Davinson Sanchez in Croatia and not the two Spurs players in the Argentina squad, which would be like an insane dynamic. Like, presumably they don't know each other. Obviously, they all speak Spanish.
Yep.
But a Colombian from Spurs and two Argentine players from Villa together training would have been really awkward for Sanchez. I mean, he really would have felt like the third wheel there, wouldn't he?
Yeah, also, I'm not sure about a five-a-side team starring Davinson Sanchez, much as I admire some of his defensive skills. I may be in a minority of one in all of that. So just to finish that sentence, the idea
apparently,
of Spurs
by the way,
fans,
just on that, yeah. Just on the football itself, apparently he had a pretty ropey couple of performances, which is a shame because I think he had started the season really well.
Yeah, his regular partner in the Colombian back four, Yerry Mina, missed the games. And the two of them seemed to complement each other very well. And the fellow who replaced him, I'm not blaming him, set Davinson off on one of his, how can we put it, less secure periods of play. Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll do what we said we would do, which was we asked the subscribers to The Athletic, God bless them, to send us serious or not-so-serious questions about Spurs. Inevitably, they were all very serious. And you picked out the best of them, and we'll try and answer them as a group as we go through the rest of this edition of The View from the Lane.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Yeah, you're listening to The View from the Lane. I'm Danny Kelly. Alongside me are Charlie Eccleshare and James Moore. Very kindly offered to answer your questions as directly and truthfully as they can. Really great crop of questions. Thank you for bringing us those. And we'll try and answer them as many as we can. James, first to you. And this is an add-on to the madness we're talking about from Sao Paulo. The obvious problem for Spurs is that one of the two centre-backs who's been starting the games in Spurs' triumphant start to the season, and one who would be expected to play very soon in Christian Romero. Sanchez and Romero are both now out of the next game. How are Spurs going to fill the gap? Who's going to play alongside, well, I presume, Eric Dier?
Yeah, I mean, as I see it, I guess there are two options. One would be shifting Tanganga inside and chucking Emerson Royal, presumably straight into the team rather than Doherty, I guess. But I suspect that may be seen as slightly too soon for Emerson Royal, you know, who probably only trained with the first team group or other players that are even there like two or three times so far. And, you know, the rest of the players obviously will come back in the second half of this week. So that to me seems unlikely. And the other option, which I guess is possibly also unlikely, given he also won't have trained that much, is Joe Roden coming in at centre half. He's just started training with Wales this week. And if he plays for Wales against Estonia on Wednesday night, maybe that'll put him in contention. I mean, I don't think either of those are really, really ideal solutions. You know, Roden had such an amazing Euros, didn't he? I mean, I think he's probably the best centre-back in the tournament up to the point that Wales conceded four goals against Denmark, which may sound stupid. But, you know, certainly in the group stage, I think he was probably the best centre-back. And, you know, I think most people would have expected him to have started the season. And it is unfortunate that he's missed out, you know, another opportunity to kind of get a bit of momentum in the first team.
Quite tricky with Joe because I applied the eye test to him. Look, his publicity so far playing for Spurs has been terrific. And partially, I think that's been driven by the fact that Sanchez and Dier were so poor in the second half of last season. I have to say, for me, and again, this is only applying what I always say, the evidence of my own eyes, I'm not sure why everyone's so thrilled about Joe Roden. He's committed and he wants to defend. Those are good things. His positioning and his pace, I'm not so certain about. And he seems to me to be one of those younger players who people are building up because they're not in the team. They want to improve the team by bringing someone. We'll see how it goes with Joe. What do you think, Charlie?
There are a couple of things I'd say on that. I mean, just thinking ahead to the weekend, if he does play with Dier.
Yeah.
It was the game at Chelsea last season, if you remember the 0-0, where Alderweireld was injured and Spurs were on this great defensive run. And it was a bit like, oh, is this going to throw things? But rather than bring Sanchez in, Mourinho brought Roden in. And he made a couple of little mistakes, but he played really, really well.
He did play really well,
and Spurs picked up a clean sheet against, you know, a pretty formidable attack. And there was a game at Sheffield United where he played as well, which is remembered for the Ndombele goal, but he was really good there as well. So I think
that was in a free, that game, though, I think, wasn't it? Sheffield
United.
Yeah,
it was, yeah.
That was a free, yeah.
But I mean, he's done enough that, you know, you can see why there is a bit of buzz around him. I mean, I agree, Danny, you know, often with these younger players who haven't played a lot, of course, because they don't have... There's not as much evidence negatively, especially for defenders. You know, he's obviously made fewer mistakes than Davinson because he's played so much less. But I do think he's a promising player. He was also unfortunate because last year he wasn't registered in the Europa League group stage matches, which would have been perfect for him to play.
Yeah, that was
a real shame. Obviously, he will have that this time around. So hopefully, he can kind of find his feet a bit in those Conference League games and then, you know, make his case to be starting the Premier League. I mean, that requires fewer changes in a way, you know, rather than the other option, as James says, which is you move
Tanganga across,
which is two things. And I think at the moment, you probably want to keep it as similar to what it has been. But yeah, we'll see. It's certainly not ideal, given how many centre-backs they have, that suddenly very few are available.
Yeah, well, I must admit, I'm not, and this again is because I'd be living my football life from a previous era. I'm not a great one for bedding Emerson Royal in. He's playing for Barcelona. Come on, get him on the pitch and let's see what he can do. Thank you very much. That was Rupert A who gave us that question. A question from Anthony P, who says, asking Charlie, actually, we talked about Lo Celso and Romero and Sanchez. And we know for definite, because it's in your piece, no doubt, that they will be fined by the club. And what Ashton Anthony wants to know is whether they are really angry with these players or whether, for the sake of optics, they have to fine them for, you know, breaching what they were told not to do.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, that. I mean, the sense I get is that they are pretty frustrated with it and pretty angry. I mean, and, you know, you could say, you know, from the player's point of view, well, they did... Again, it comes down to that semantics. They were aware of the plan, even if from their perspective they say they were never happy about it. But I think they are genuinely pretty angry about it. And especially now, because of the way things played out, it is a bit of an embarrassment for the club when you've got two of your players being chased off a pitch by a couple of health officials and you know, law enforcement representatives. So I don't think the optics of that are great. And yes, that might partly contributed to why Spurs were particularly annoyed about it. But I do think it is an interesting dynamic because you've got a guy in Christian Romero who comes in this summer, biggest summer signing, huge amount of buzz. has barely played for the club and already is getting a fine and can probably expect a pretty frosty reception at Hotspur Way. So it's not an ideal situation. And it's not one that you can sort of put in that denial file and hope goes away, because it's going to come up again in a few weeks' time. I don't think it's going to count against them massively long term. But I do wonder as well if it's something that now becomes more of a consideration when signing players. If you think there used to be this idea, and it may still exist, that some clubs were wary of signing players who played for African countries because you'd lose them midway through a season. And that was genuinely thought to be a consideration. And I do wonder if in this COVID world, maybe you could say that's short term, but this could, if they played all the games that they're supposed to play, that would leave them playing very little for Tottenham between now and Christmas. So I do wonder if it will slightly inform the kind of players that Paratici goes after going forward.
I'd love to know what those three players are going to be thinking, assuming they watch the game like on TV or whatever on Saturday. Obviously, from their perspective, it's quite good for them in a way if Spurs lose, because it gives the impression they need to be in the team. But obviously, the worse Spurs do in the matches they miss, the bigger the funk is going to be when they come back. So I do kind of wonder what it will be like, that dynamic of those three watching that Palace game on Saturday lunchtime.
I suppose we end on the goings on in Brazil. I suppose we should say the players are lucky to be back in Croatia. Liverpool's Naby Keita was stuck in Guinea after he played an African World Cup qualifier there, after a coup broke out around him. So at least we haven't had that. And that's a genuine human worry, terrible though COVID is. I spoke to Tim Vickery, my colleague in South America, and he's been keeping up to date throughout the pandemic with the goings on in Brazil, just as a background to what we've been talking about. I mean, per head of capita, actually a tautology, isn't it? They've lost more people than anybody else. I mean, it's been absolutely dreadful in Brazil. But, and thank whatever God you worship for this, they are getting it somewhat under control. The situation in Colombia at the moment is not so good, and that's why Davinson Sanchez is another one who probably should have taken very careful consideration before he took the private jet out. Let's move on then. James, this is a really, I'm really fascinated with this question. This is from Jack M, who is, of course, asking from the excellent position of Spurs bestriding the Premier League like a colossus, looking down with their 9 maximum points on everyone else, wonders what's going to happen this month. There are 9 points available in September, Palace away, Chelsea at home, Arsenal away. James, what would constitute a good or very good September for Spurs?
Well, on the basis of gradings, which I think it sounds like what Jack was after, I mean, obviously 9 points from those 3 games, Chelsea at home and Arsenal away in particular, they're huge games to Spurs, as we know. So 9 points clearly would be a star. I think that goes without saying. Then 7 is an A, isn't it? I mean, if they beat Palace, beat Arsenal, draw against Chelsea, I mean, to be honest, even that feels like it's almost A star territory, that, isn't it? I think be very happy with that, I think. 6 points. Beat Palace, lose to Chelsea, who we think are going to be incredibly strong this season, then beat Arsenal, which obviously is going to be a big positive for us. I think we'd be very happy with that. You'd look favourably on that, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
So maybe as a B, maybe even B plus.
I'm glad you didn't mark my A levels. I got to be honest, these are very stern, these marks. I mean, let's be fair. If they get, in my opinion, and I'll see what Charlie thinks, if they got those 9 points that you fantasised a little earlier, I'd be saying you have to consider them contenders for the league title. If they've got 9 points from those games and maximum points from their first 6, I'm breaking out the champagne.
I'm purely going on this academic standard that has been set by Jack. I can't give any more than that.
Okay, so even if they get 6 points from 3 London derbies, you're only giving them a B. Man, you're tough. That is very tough indeed.
Wow. I mean, I would bring university grading. I think
that's the difference between me and Charlie, by the way.
Yeah.
I think you'd give a first for certainly 7 points.
Whoa, that'd be great, yeah.
That'd be amazing. I think even 5 points, I think, would be really, really good. Because that would mean...
What's a 2-2? This is for my reference.
A 2-2, I think...
Slightly underwhelming career in the football media. Four.
A 4 points? But even that, I'd say, I don't think that would be a disaster. I think it slightly depends where they came. But if, say, they drew with Palace away, I don't think that's a terrible result. If they won the North London Derby and lost to Chelsea, they'd still be in a pretty good position having played Chelsea, Arsenal and City.
And being completely realistic, how you feel about that month at the end is going to be determined entirely by the Arsenal result, isn't it? Like you say, if they draw away Palace and lose to Chelsea, then
thank
win
you.
At Arsenal.
Thank you. Now we've drilled down to the actual issue here, that everything depends on how they get on.
Look, yeah, don't get me wrong. If I'm picking one of those three games to win, it is definitely that.
Hang on, let me just ask you a question. You've just admitted there that you got a 2-2 in your degree. I mean,
that's right.
Charlie's face, I mean, the disdain was extraordinary. Given that is essentially what you get for turning up, it's a consolation prize at a primary school sack race. Did you go to the presentation ceremony and wear a mortarboard and all that?
No, I actually didn't go.
Good.
Which is, was a bit of a shame because Damon Albarn was there. He did he got an honorary degree.
Oh. Yes, so, you could have seen Damon. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I just wondered. I mean, I didn't go either for my degree ceremony, but I asked my parents once if they regretted they didn't get a chance to applaud me onto a stage for getting my degree. They both looked at me. They had no idea what I was talking about. None whatsoever.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Yeah, thank you once again for all the questions you sent in via The Athletic for the View from the Lane podcast. Obviously, we are biased towards anybody called Maurizio on this podcast. So Maurizio C's question went almost straight to the top of the pile. It was a question for Charlie Eccleshare. And Charlie, it's asking for a little bit of psychological insight from yourself here. He says, what is Nuno's relationship with Tanguy? Is this something that could be salvaged? He then goes on to give his own opinions. Without Aurier or Sissoko, it seems like Tanguy will be even more miserable and less likely to play. I'm hoping we can salvage something out of him because he's an immense talent. Let's take the immense talent as a given. It's getting something out of this fellow now. And do you know what his relationship is like with the new manager?
Well, it's not been especially positive so far because Ndombele's wanted to leave the club. Obviously, for a new manager coming in, you want players who are completely committed to the project. Now, I'm sure people listening to this will be screaming, well, what about Harry Kane? You know, he didn't exactly, scream commitment in that long running saga, but we don't need to go into that. So I don't think it's been particularly positive. I mean, Nuno is quite distant from the players outside of training. You know, training's where he comes alive. That's where he communicates with them. He's not someone who particularly appreciates the fabled knocking on the manager's door and asking why he's playing. And to be honest, Ndombele's not the kind of guy to do that anyway. He's very reserved, very shy. He doesn't like confrontation. He didn't like it with Mourinho, doesn't like it with Nuno. So, you know, these two are not going to have spoken a huge amount to one another. It will ultimately come down to, you know, how much Ndombele wants to try and prove himself, which, you know, he, from his point of view, he very much does. And this, you know, this idea of whether he can reintegrate himself back into the team, I do think that's possible. And the Europa Conference League, I think, will be really important for that because that will allow Nuno to play him without it seeming like, you know, he's done a 180 and is suddenly like, yeah, no, and Ndombele, you're back in the team. It's a way of phasing him back. And also, you know, this is a midfield that needs creativity. We know
that.
You know, yes, that they might play in a different way, and so far it's worked well for them. But I think there are very few people who could have watched their game so far and say they wouldn't have benefited at some point in those matches from an Ndombele. So And, you know, Nuno would appreciate that. I don't think he's going to be so proud as to say, no, I'm not going to play him, especially because his reasons for playing him were that he, or part of them anyway, were that clearly Ndombele didn't really want to be there. But now he is there. He will, you know, try and get back into the team. And I don't think it's over for him necessarily.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that because I want to be optimistic about this. I'm not. I have to tell you, I'm not. But of course, football never ceases to surprise me. Health officials on the pitch in Brazil, notwithstanding. James, we want this to go well. Building up your own stores of optimism, can you see any prospect of this turning out right for Spurs?
Not in the long term, no. The way I can really see it going is him coming back into the team. You know, he'll come back into the team in the Conference League games, I guess, won't he?
Yeah.
And I kind of feel like we've seen this with, and I'm not comparing Ndombele as a player to some of these other players I mentioned, but people like Pavlyuchenko, who, you know, we're going way back into the distant past now. But, you know, he kind of didn't set the world alight early on, wasn't in the team, and then had a bit of a renaissance, I think, under Redknapp after maybe 2 years at the club or whatever. And I can kind of see we might get a bit of that over the course of the season, you know, in the Conference League, maybe in the cup competitions, and obviously come into the league team and maybe show some flashes of that quality. But I just have my doubts that it's going to be like a long-term solution for him or for Spurs.
The backup to those doubts, and this is another question from Mertzi M, is that, you know, he or she, I'm not sure what Mertzi, which gender it refers to, or if any, for the fourth manager in a row now, we're trying to get the best out of Tanguy Ndombele. Weren't the scouting and recruiting team aware of the risks in his lack of commitment and training motivation? I mean, the problem for me there is I'm not sure that he had those problems at Lyon. And he seemed reasonably happy. Or was it that, I hate to say this about a record transfer, did Spurs, off the back of his extraordinary performances in the Champions League against Manchester City, did they buy, and this is no reflection on him, a pig in a poke?
I mean, I think also lack of commitment and training motivation is maybe a bit harsh.
Because we have no way of knowing, do we?
Yeah, I think that's a slightly... that might overstate it a bit. What I would say on this is that had Pochettino stayed, I think that is a really important thing to remember. And I think if you ask them, Pochettino and his team, they really felt that they could get something out of Ndombele, that he could have been a success. I think that change in manager shouldn't be underestimated, because he is a player who is not necessarily to everyone's taste, you know, and Mourinho coming in, it was always a pretty uneasy relationship. What I would say on that as well, just informing how we look at it now, that, you know, Mourinho called Ndombele out in that game against Burnley in March 2020, and he barely played in Project Restart. And at that time, everyone was saying the same things, that this is it for Ndombele, you know, how's he ever going to get back in the team? Obviously, then he did and was great. You know, he played really, really well in that period where Spurs went top. So I wouldn't necessarily rule it out. But I do think that sort of confluence of circumstances hasn't helped him. I mean, if you imagine, let's say Spurs signed Dele Alli in 2015, if Pochettino got sacked a few months after that, there's every chance that the new manager coming in would have thought, well, where does this guy play? I don't really know what he does. And his career could have gone in a different way. So I do think those things have been unfortunate for Ndombele. And that's what can happen when you change managers, and especially if you lurch from someone so diametrically opposed as Pochettino to Mourinho, that there is going to be collateral damage. And I think Ndombele, unfortunately, has been that so far.
And I wondered on the last day of the transfer window, when they were sniffing around Adama Traore, whether they had worked out that if you're going to have three hard-working, excellent footballers, all the rest of it, but no very little creativity in the midfield, as Spurs have started the season with, you have to go the Liverpool route. Your front three then have to produce all the dynamism themselves, as Liverpool's fantastic front three has done for the past 3 or 4 years. And it would have been Son, Traore and Kane. And maybe that was part of the solution, is to have all the creativity in the team, fullbacks notwithstanding, right at the front loaded. But that didn't come off. So they're going to have to find something out of Dele Alli, Lo Celso or Ndombele. Otherwise, large Christian Eriksen-shaped hole in the team that's existed for some time is just going to get bigger and bigger.
Just really quickly on that, I got a message on Twitter today from Gavin North, who made quite an interesting point, similar to what you've said, but he emphasised the fullback element and said, if you remember, there was the talk about Liverpool in 2018-19 when their title charge fell away.
Yeah.
The accusation was that they didn't have enough, you know, creativity in midfield. Mm. But they then went ahead with the same midfield and smashed the league the following season, partly because of that front three, but also because they're two extremely attacking, positive fullbacks. And so I think what Gavin was saying was that potentially are Spurs going to try something similar with Reguilon and Royal, both, you know, they're kind of acting as extra attackers, and then you have that more solid central midfield three. Obviously, there's a big difference in the front three of Spurs compared to Liverpool. Although, you'd say with Kane and Son, you've got two absolutely elite players.
There's definitely more goals there in those two.
Yeah, exactly. And then if, you know, if Bergwijn kicks on this season, or, you know, Moura contributes, Hill comes in, and you know, so it's possible, but I agree that there's, you know, that there is still something missing.
That Liverpool point does kind of underline the fact that you do sometimes just stumble into this stuff though, right? Because Liverpool were desperate to sign Nabil Fakir, weren't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
Was he playing for it at the time? Was he playing at Lyon at the time, maybe?
I think so.
But equally, then it also, it's a learning league, isn't it, James? People saw that you can win the title or do well, let's call it that, without an obvious playmaker, but that doesn't. That, and that's why when they didn't get Traore, I was in no way surprised they went out for the most attacking fullback they could find for the right hand side of the team, because they are. That was the route they were obviously going. Hold the midfield, make a block of five between the two centre backs in the midfield, and then the other five go all out attack, and you don't have to have a lock picking player in midfield. This is a good one. I'm interested in this. This is a question from Charlie G. James, I'll ask you this. In terms of the top four, and I think when you started as well as Spurs have, you're allowed to dream of the top four. Which club out of Manchester City, Liverpool, even just reading these names out, it's frightened me a bit, Manchester United and Chelsea might be the most likely candidate to slip up and leave a space for one of the chasing pack, who he seems to include, Spurs, Leicester, West Ham, et al. No mention of the other North Londoners there. I mean, all these teams he talks about, Spurs and Leicester and West Ham, will be dreaming of the top four, but it is quite a solid-looking group, that four, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think we talked about this last week. I mean, those four teams are incredibly strong. Manchester City maybe haven't strengthened loads in bringing in Grealish in an area where they're already quite strong, actually, so they probably haven't strengthened that much, but clearly they're head and shoulders above Spurs and those other teams in that group. United obviously have strengthened ludicrously this summer. Chelsea, again, have built well on what they had before, and I think they'll be really strong too. Liverpool are the one of those four who I would say are most at risk, purely because their squad isn't massive. And I know they had a couple of injuries at the back last season, but that really did expose like how weak they were in midfield when they had to shift things around. So they would be the one who I'd say are most at risk of the four. But even then, I mean, it is hard to imagine, isn't it, Spurs finishing above Liverpool, unfortunately.
Sure. I presume, Charlie, you would agree that Liverpool are the ones who look the most likely, although their first 11, their first 15, shall we say, still looks formidable.
Yeah, I mean, I have said on this podcast before, I do think generally you do have one of, even of those big four in inverted commas, you know, one has a difficult season for whatever reason. I mean, is it crazily optimistic to think United, with all those signings, you know, in the way that Varane slightly upset the balance all those years ago, sometimes when you bring in lots of huge names who kind of have to start games, even if they don't merit a place, I always think that's maybe not the best place to be, especially if they're on the slightly older side. I'm not saying United are going to have a bad season, but I don't think it would be, you know, let's fast forward 2 months and everyone's saying wisely, you know, have they just gone for ready-made stars? Has that upset the balance and an impinged Greenwood's development? You know,
they obviously have this hole in midfield as well, don't they? They haven't signed a defensive midfielder.
Well, and with, you know, we saw what happened in the recent Euros. And with my Irish hat on, I watched very intently the heartbreaking game between the Republic and Portugal the other night, in which Cristiano scored two extraordinary headers towards the end. I mean, once again, if you take Kane out of the equation, the next most effective player in the Premier League, Bruno Fernandes, spent the game, until he was substituted, running into the back of Cristiano Ronaldo. Not just into his space, but physically into his back on one occasion. Mm. And there's the place where Manchester United have got to work it out. Now, of course, they'll be training together every day rather than once every 8 weeks. Maybe they'll sort that out. But at a national level, they haven't sorted that. And equally, Bruno Fernandes, he does like a pot shot, and he has converted quite a few of those into goals. He will be frowned at from the centre-forward position if he does not be supplying said centre-forward with the ball rather more than he's been inclined to do when looking at the back of Anthony Martial's shirt. So they've got a chemical problem, Manchester United. Can they turn what are obviously brilliant ingredients into something attractive and winning? We are, of course, here just checking with the National Union of Straw Clutchers to see if we're allowed to do this. Yes, it's okay. It's okay. I've got the certificate. We are allowed to clutch exactly these straws. Okay, well, much I've enjoyed the chaos and tumult of the international break. Of course, the football is coming back. At the weekend, Spurs play Crystal Palace. We'll have a full preview of that in the Thursday edition of The View from the Lane. But very quickly, your hopes and fears, James, for that game?
It's just dawned on me that was kind of a turning point last season, wasn't it, Palace away? That you know, terrible draw when they'd been on top for much of the game and kind of handed the impetus back to Palace. So that's what I'm hoping doesn't happen.
And you, Charlie, 3 points for the Spurs?
I always think with international breaks, fixtures like these, I haven't actually checked this. I don't know how many internationals Palace have, but I suspect it's not, you know, as many as Tottenham, who feel like they've had pretty much everyone away. I do always think that gives the team with the fewer internationals away a bit of an advantage, especially when it's the early Saturday kickoff. So it wouldn't amaze me.
And especially when half your squad's in Croatia.
Well, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, never that great when you've got three of your players in a training camp in Croatia. So I feel it might be one of those quite flat 12-30 games. It wouldn't massively surprise me if it was a low-scoring draw.
Okay, well, listen, thank you once again, particularly for that rather miserable end to the podcast.
Yeah, sorry, that's really downbeat end. It'll be 5-4 Spurs.
Thank you very... Well, that'd be lovely, wouldn't it? Thank you very, very much indeed to both of you. Thank you all for listening to the podcast. And remember, if you're not already a subscriber, you can read Charlie's article on the situation in Brazil and, of course, Jack Pitt-Brook's view on it as well by going to theathletic.com/SpursPod. And right now you can sign up at a 33% discount on a full subscription. And of course, that's the way you'll be able to get your questions answered in future mailbag specials like today's. So it's a pretty good deal all round. As I say, we'll be back on Thursday. We'll look ahead to that game against Palace. We'll find out how it's going at Butlins in Croatia. Thank you for listening.
The Athletic.